following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, May 11th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about you, the cannabis community. Joining me here in the studio, our engineer, Ganja John.
Hey, everybody.
Busy day here. We are making sure all of the knobs and buttons are working correctly. We had some difficulties yesterday, but I think we've got them ironed out.
I think we got them ironed out.
And yeah. A great clip that we just played before the show started of Be Real from Cypress Hill. I want to make sure we get this on the replay. So this was Be Real at the spring gathering when he noticed me filming with the laptop and streaming live on Stick'Em. This is Be Real pointing me out in the crowd.
Hey, you're broadcasting on Stick'Em, right? Yeah. Right on. Big up to the people at Stick'Em. I broadcast on Stick'Em to BeReal.tv, BeReal.tv on Stick'Em. So big up to everybody watching from this page. I know your show. I supported you. Remember that. Y'all watch that show too, because the more informed you can be about this whole movement, the better. Because we got, it takes all of us to have this knowledge to be able to use it to obtain that legalization. We can get it, but it takes all of us.
That's right. It takes all of us, and big thanks to Be Real for giving shout out to the show. We really appreciate that. And joining us in our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Yes, I am virtually here with all of you.
You know, Carrie, I got an email from a listener who was really concerned that I call you my half sister, and he says, Just call her your sister, man. Embrace the love or something like that. I forget what it was exactly.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
But just to let folks know, the joke is half sister because I have a different dad and Carrie has a different mom, right? She's like the sister I never had. We've known each other since 94. We've lived together a couple of different places and always been good friends, good roommates. And I'm so happy to have you on the show, Carrie.
And just to make you guys feel...
Yeah, that's right, because I only have sisters and you only have brothers.
That's right.
And just to make that niche.
When they became friends, I was in the fourth grade.
Yeah, just to make us feel old.
Just to make you feel old.
Thanks, Ganja John.
No problem.
Thank you.
And Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the top of the hour. So what's in the news today?
Oh, well, today we're going to do a follow-up on the story we did yesterday about those firebombed dispensaries up in Montana. We're also going to look at what the dispensaries are doing. They're kind of gearing up for the big showdown come June 7th when the Los Angeles dispensaries are going to be asked to close. And a long-awaited policy change from the Obama administration was released today, so we're going to break that down for the listeners.
All right. Thanks. Stick around, everyone, for that. We'll do that right after our first break. Also coming up on today's show, we've got our Electric Tuesday music, the best in electronica, and we got a song from Sly Joe. At the bottom of the hour, 30 after, we've got our California Marijuana Marijuana Report with Eric Brenner, an interview with Charles Lynch, and great news about the California Marijuana Report. It's now on in its entirety at Beverly Hills 90210. That's normal90210.org. And on terrestrial radio in Monterey at AM 540, I believe. So that's really good news. We're getting the message out to more and more people. And at the end of the show, 45 after, I'll be delivering another one of my patented radical rants. Some more news coming in on that Columbia, Missouri SWAT dog killing. We've got a response from PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. We've got a response, a wonderful response from Fox News' Judge Napolitano, and response from the Columbia Police Department as they try to cover their tracks. All of that and more coming up now on Normal Show Live. So stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. Remember, you can catch all of our news on our blog at stash.normal.org. You can send me an email, stash@normal.org, and you can follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I smoke lots of weed, man. I plant that big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache mixed brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me.
Or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
And as promised, a follow-up on the story we did yesterday about two Montana medical marijuana dispensaries being targeted for firebombs and vandalism. The Montana City Council announced their meeting and voted to restrict any more dispensaries opening within city limits. After hours of contentious debate fueled by the day's violence against the new businesses, the council finally took a vote at 1:35 a.m. and placed a six-month moratorium on new licenses, mandated that existing businesses must remain in their current locations, and the council considered but ultimately did not support an outright ban on medical marijuana sales. On Sunday and again on Monday, two medical marijuana dispensaries had rocks thrown through their windows, Molotov cocktails thrown inside, and were both tagged with the graffiti that read, "Not in our town," with the R backwards, as in Toys R Us. No one was injured in the attack, and the businesses sustained a few $1,000s each in damages. Trevor McFerrin, co-owner of Montana Therapeutics, that was one of the targets, spoke before the vote saying that the attacks were misguided and that his business, which provides marijuana to about 50 people, has never logged a complaint of any kind since its opening in early April. After the meeting, he told the Associated Press that the act was an ugly hate crime and that it was more of an attack on the community than anything else. Police said today that they do not have any suspects in the attack, but were investigating whether the businesses were targeted by competitors or industry protesters. A longtime anti-hate group in Billings that has the same name, Not in Our Town, were questioned, but said it was just a coincidence that the graffiti message matched the name of their group. A spokesman said the group's board members were weighing in whether or not to campaign against the firebombings.
Carrie, this group you just mentioned, this Not in Our Town group, what is their purpose?
Originally, they had gotten together to protest hate crimes like neo-Nazi literature that was being on windshields and such like that. And they sort of got together, and they're just kind of anti-hate crime people.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I hope they can recognize that this is a hate crime. It's a hate crime against people who use cannabis, plain and simple. This type of cowboy mentality, I grew up around this in Idaho, and it's, you know, it's prevalent in Montana too, where people, a lot of these, you know, knuckle draggers out there who fancy themselves beer drinkers, will have this anti-pot sort of stance, right? You know, those of us who use cannabis, we don't care what else you're using. You know, if you want to drink beer, that's great. You know, you want to smoke cigarettes, that's great. We don't care. But there are a lot of people who are in that, you know, beer community, beer drinking, beer chugging, let's go to the game, get macho kind of guys who are virulently anti-marijuana and more so anti-hippie. And that's really what it comes down to. We don't want them damn hippies around here. I mean, watch an episode of South Park, you can kind of get the idea of what these people are like. So just to go over what they decided, a six-month moratorium on any new businesses and no move for the current businesses. So I guess they'll remain targets, right? You know, they can't move to somewhere better, a better location, maybe more protected, better lit, better security. No, they've got to stay put at this point. But at least Montana Billings didn't decide to ban them altogether. We'll keep an eye on what's going on in Montana and get you the latest news when that develops.
The battle to close over 400 medical marijuana dispensaries is heating up in Los Angeles as dispensary owners lawyer up and make a plan to save their businesses. The Wall Street Journal reported today that the city of Los Angeles will face years of litigation after their crackdown on the dispensaries that they are gearing up for come June 7th. Many dispensaries are launching legal challenges to the ordinance that requires them to close, some after years of successful operation. A new coalition representing 130 dispensaries that were ordered to close via a letter from the city attorney's office promises that they will not go quietly and that they will exhaust every legal avenue to fight the new policy. The city is also lawyering up, hiring some legal analysts for their side of the inevitable showdown. Some residents have complained that the dispensaries have created a public nuisance and that it seems that many customers are shopping for recreational, not medical reasons. Lawyers on the side of the dispensaries argue that the new ordinance discriminates against dispensaries that opened after the moratorium on new shops was issued by the city in 2007, a rule that wasn't enforced. While Los Angeles is shutting down 439 sources of revenue for the city, it appears that it is planning on spending hundreds of thousands to defend their new policy. We will be watching this drama as it unfolds come June 7th and will keep you posted on any new developments.
The city of Los Angeles in this case is like a guy who gets a pot leaf tattoo on his forearm, deciding to cut off his arm because he doesn't like the tattoo anymore. Talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. We're going to use another metaphor here. The city is just drowning in debt. The whole state of California is drowning in debt. Los Angeles is hemorrhaging jobs. You know, people can't find work. And yet you're going to take 400 successful businesses that are currently paying somewhere on the order of $40 million a year in sales taxes, you're going to shut those down. And consider that every single dispensary you shut down probably has, what, 10 employees, 5, 10, 20? Somewhere in there, probably. Let's say an average of 10 employees. So 4,000 people we're going to put out of work and put out there on the streets looking for a job. And meanwhile, while you're letting all that tax revenue go away and all those successful jobs go away and the people who work those jobs that contribute to the economy, you're going to have those all go away. In the meantime, you're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to litigate this in court. Man, you really, really, really got to hate pot to go through all that trouble and all that cost, don't you think? And you know, this other part, where they said some residents say people are shopping for recreational reasons. How exactly, when you see someone go into a dispensary, do you determine that their use or their shopping for cannabis is for medical or for recreational reasons? I mean, I suppose what? The guy that goes in a wheelchair, well, he's probably okay. But the guy who walks in, why, gosh, that's got to be recreational. The older person who goes in all frail and gaunt, well, gosh, that's got to be medical. But the young person who goes in all spry and lively, well, that's got to be recreational. Is that how it's done? Because I'd really like to know how these people in Los Angeles on site can tell whether someone has epilepsy or irritable bowel syndrome or depression or anxiety. You know, this is what continues to happen because of this idiotic dividing line between patient and criminal, where we have to try to read people's minds to discern what reason they want to use cannabis for. Oh, well, if it's medical, that's okay. But gosh, if you're just enjoying yourself, that's not good enough.
And, you know, I have to deal with this all the time. People look at me like I just like drugs.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm a 24-year-old kid who's on dialysis. You can't tell by looking at me.
Right.
You know, and I deal with this all the time. So, you know, to the people who say, you know, they're doing it recreationally, you know,
it's
F you.
It's discrimination.
Yeah, it is.
It's total discrimination, and we're not going to put up with it anymore. So, again, I encourage everyone in California to get out, register to vote, vote for the Tax Cannabis 2010 initiative. Let's get it legal once and for all so we can erase this stupid line between patient and criminal.
And the Obama administration has released their new national drug control policy today, and the long-awaited statement from our nation's leader has some promising aspects. President Obama is trying to make good on an election promise that the White House should put more resources into drug prevention and treatment, and his pledge to treat illegal drug use more as a public health issue than a criminal justice problem. The battle between the medical marijuana policies on a state level and the conflict with federal policies has taken another step in the right direction. The Obama administration will not seek to arrest medical marijuana users and suppliers as long as they conform to state laws under the new policy guidelines. The changes are small but significant, as the Obama administration seems to be seeking to undo some of the damage of the past administration's drug policies. The Department of Justice is changing their course on medical marijuana by letting state governments know that federal authorities would defer to the state's efforts to legally regulate medical marijuana under their own state laws. Now, under the Bush administration, the Department of Justice stated they would continue to enforce federal anti-marijuana laws regardless of state laws. Other big changes in the new national drug control policies: repealing the ban on federal funding needle exchange programs seeking to reduce the spread of HIV and AIDS, and calling on Congress to eliminate the disparity in sentencing between crack cocaine crimes and powder cocaine crimes. And while the policy memo describes a change in priorities away from prosecuting medical marijuana cases, it does not completely rule out the possibility that the federal government could still prosecute someone whose activities are allowed under state law. The memo is designed to give a sense of prosecutorial priorities to U.S. attorneys in the state that allow medical marijuana. It notes that pot sales in the United States are the largest source of money for violent Mexican drug cartels, but adds that federal law enforcement agencies have limited resources. Medical marijuana advocates have been anxious to see exactly how the administration would implement candidate Barack Obama's repeated promise to change the policy in situations which allow states to allow the use of medical marijuana. Since Obama has taken office, DEA agents raided some dispensaries in Los Angeles, prompting confusion about the government's plan. Drug reform activists are receiving the memo with few reservations, wondering if this is more rhetoric than actual policy, noting that the drug control budget proposal released earlier this year continues to spend twice as much money on enforcement as it does on programs to reduce demand. One thing is for certain, it is a refreshing tone after years of drug war rhetoric. Hopefully this new direction will take us one step closer to ending cannabis prohibition.
Uh-huh, and there's an old saying that goes, money talks and BS walks. Let me bring you a graph up here on our screen for those of you watching on the show. This is a graph of Obama's balanced approach to drug war funding. He says he wants to do more prevention and treatment, but two-thirds of the budget for the drug war in his latest 2011 budget request goes to law enforcement and interdiction, one-third goes to treatment and prevention. $9.9 billion for law enforcement, $5.6 billion for treatment and prevention. A ratio pretty much the same as it's always been. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. As far as backing off on medical marijuana, you can ask the 30 or 40 different dispensaries that have been raided with the aid of federal troops. The only difference there being that Obama wants the locals to make the call first, and then he'll let the DEA go in and help them. As far as allowing needle exchange, that is a fantastic move. I'm glad to hear that, but it's really interesting to find that it's okay for us to give needles to heroin addicts, But, you know, we've got to keep coming down on people that, choose to use cannabis. Eliminating the crack powder disparity, that's the one where a poor man's cocaine gets you 100 times the sentence as rich man's white powder. That's another good move. We'll be glad to see that. But also, President Obama has been very clear, and Gil Kerlikowske, the drug czar, has been very clear. They are completely against legalization. They are completely against California's initiative to begin legalization. So again, I hear a little bit of rhetoric, but I don't see much in the way of changes coming up here. So I wouldn't hold your breath that you're going to see much different with regard to marijuana. A little bit of relaxation for the heroin addicts, a little bit of addressing the problem for the cocaine addicts. But for those of us who choose to use the safest therapeutically active substance known to man, for those of us who choose to use the substance that's safer than alcohol and less harmful than tobacco, we are going to continue to be persecuted and prosecuted by the Obama administration. Mark my words, this won't change until California and other states start changing it and force the federal government's hand, force them to have to send troops in to stop us from legalizing cannabis. That's what I want to see in November. Get out and vote.
We gotta stop starting this one on a bummer.
I know. It's all that happy music comes up.
Yeah.
And we just got all ranting and sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's time for a break. Let's go to our happy place. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
This is Normal Show Live.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
Providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
Right. I don't care what you say. That ain't right. I said, that ain't right. That ain't right. I don't care what you say. That
ain't right. I don't got no computer.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electronic music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and electronica. Brought to you by Sarah Kant in Boston, Massachusetts, and Sarah Kant Photography. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Welcome back. 23 after the hour. Unfortunately, Sara can't join us today. She had a family emergency and she's had to go down to Florida. So I'll take care of the music. But before we get to the music, I do want to give a shout out to our beloved advertisers, the paid advertisers on the show, MarijuanaDoctors.com, Law420.com, HerbAgeDesigns.com, Homegrown.com, and Starfish Designs. I'd really like to thank them for paying their bills on time, not stiffing me for 4 months of advertising and never bouncing a check. Thank you so much for doing that. All right, let's get to our music. We've got some music here from Sly Joe and the Smooth Operators. Some great stuff here for you. Don't know too much about it, but we're going to play it for you right now. This is a song called High.
In the sky far below our feet, misty clouds will drift along. Merrily we'll sing a song. Life is perfect, easy to explain. Oh, aloha, no way. Choir singing sweet refrains, a sprinkling to a pouring rain. Easy to explain. Let's go high, climbing up Mount Tamalpais, leaving castles in the sky far below our feet. Misty clouds will drift along, merrily we'll sing a song. Life is but a dream, but the joy today brings. Up in Mount Hee, the hot springs, join the sparrows as they sing, and flying on an eagle's wing, what joy today brings. Let's go high, climbing up Mount Tamalpais, leaving castles in the sky far below our feet. Misty clouds will drift along, sing a song. Life is but a dream. Today the greatest day to be alive. Yeah.
Another clip from the spring gathering that I was at this last weekend on Saturday. Great panels there with B-Real, Tommy Chong, Angelo Moore from Fishbone, and Rory from Revolution were all a part of this panel on music and marijuana. And there was a great question asked of B-Real from one of the audience members. Let's play that.
I want to know who your five favorite stoners to smoke with.
Five favorite stoners to smoke with. Wow,
in the industry,
that's a good question.
In the industry.
Okay, Red and Meth, Tommy Chong, Snoop Dogg, and who's the other one, man? Willie Nelson. Although I haven't smoked with Willie yet, he's next on my list, but that's who the five would be.
Right on.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, time for your cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Today, Tuesday, May 11th, there's a weekly medicating event taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. And the Kalamazoo Area Compassion Club is meeting in Kalamazoo, Michigan at Charlie's Place. For more information, check out Michigan Normal at minormal.org. Hemp TV is on today at 6 p.m. local time in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm sorry, that'll be at 7 o'clock in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Call 505-880 1-800-666 for tickets to the show and more information. On Thursday, May 13th, Pittsburgh Normal is having their monthly open meeting at the Ava Shadow Lounge facility in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Check out pittsburghnormal.org for details. On Friday, May 14th, we've got Ohio Normal's spring encampment taking place at the Crazy River Ranch. For more information, check out ohionormal.org. On Saturday, May 15th, Wisconsin Normal's having their statewide meeting at Mr. Ed's in Tomah, Wisconsin. Check out winormal.org for details. Kansas City Normal also on Saturday will be having their public meeting. This will be at the Westport Coffee House. And for more information, check out kcnormal.org or call 888-KC-NORMAL. For information on all of these events, including names, dates, email addresses, web addresses, and more, check out the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at norml.org/calendar.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This year, the Drugstore's office has a $60 million budget for advertising their Reefer Madness propaganda. We here at Normal don't have that kind of money, but we've got two weapons for fighting back. Your donations and the truth. Please, make a donation to Normal so we can continue to expand this podcast and our other media campaigns. Even a donation of $4.20 can help. Visit us on the web at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L. Thank you for caring and sharing. Give me the weed, that's what I need. When I smoke it,
satisfaction guaranteed. Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch-long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. California has long been the epicenter of marijuana law reform in the United States. Every Tuesday, we're joined by Eric Brenner, the producer of the California Marijuana Report, for an interview with an important figure in cannabis in the Golden State. You can hear the entire California Marijuana Report online at Beverly Hills Normal at normal90210.org and on the radio at KRXA AM 540 in Monterey. Now, here's another great interview with Eric Brenner.
Hi, this is Cheech Marin, and you listen to Eric Brenner on the California Marijuana Report.
Joining us this week on the California Marijuana Report is Charles C. Lynch. Charles Lynch is the former owner and managing caregiver for the Central Coast Compassionate Caregivers in Morro Bay, California. On March 29, 2007, the local sheriff and drug enforcement agents raided the dispensary and home of Charles Lynch. Lynch was not arrested at the time. They reopened the dispensary on April 7, 2007, once again with the blessing of the city of Morro Bay. 1 week after reopening the dispensary, the Drug Enforcement Agency called the landlord and threatened him with forfeiture of his property unless he evicted Lynch from the building. On May 16, 2007, the dispensary closed for good. On July 7, 2007, Lynch was arrested at his home and charged with federal marijuana distribution. Lynch pled not guilty and went on trial July 22, 2008 in Los Angeles. Lynch was not allowed to discuss state law or mention medical marijuana during the trial. In August of 2008, Lynch was convicted in federal court for operating the Central Coast Compassionate Caregivers. On January 6, 2009, Lynch appeared before Judge Wu to request a new trial on the grounds he was not allowed to get his defense before the jury and other new evidence. The request was denied. Lynch has been out on a $400,000 bail posted by his family and was under house arrest for over 9 months. Charles Lynch, welcome back to the California Marijuana Report.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Charles, this has been a grueling 3 years for you. You have held up remarkably well. Tell us the latest with your case.
First it took almost a year for Judge Wu to finally write his memo about the sentencing, and basically that just went through a lot of details about the trial and how he got around the mandatory minimums in my case. After he did that, after he issued that sentencing memo, then I had 10 days to file an appeal. And so last week, I believe May 6th, my federal public defenders, they filed the appeal paperwork. That's all it is, really, is a form they fill out and issue to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And so it's still going to be quite a long haul to actually go through the appeal process.
Now, let's talk about the conditions of your parole. You're on parole, right? Is that what it's called?
Actually, I'm still in pretrial services since the judge let me out on appeal. I'm officially not under the probation department. I'm under the pretrial services department, so it's a little different from being on probation.
Okay, so you're on. So you're basically under. Not near. Are you still under house arrest? No, you're not.
No. Actually, like you mentioned earlier, I was under house arrest for 9 months. I wore an ankle bracelet for even longer than that, and I only spent 4 days in jail so far. But I'm out on a $400,000 bail still posted by my family. For the past 3 years, the feds have been drug testing me and searching my house and pretty much breathing down my neck, In the past week, after the judge finally wrote his sentencing memo, my attorneys, they also filed a motion to lift the drug, daily random drug testing. And then also, they've been making me drive to L.A. It's 200 miles from where I live. And so they make me drive to L.A. twice a month, and I go down there, all the way down there, for a five-minute meeting. I turn around and come home, and it costs me $100 and a whole day, just to drive down there and report for this five-minute meeting. And so they changed that a little bit, too. Now I got to drive to Santa Barbara, which is only 100 miles, and I only have to do that once a month. But, they're still making me go through a lot of unnecessary steps here.
Charles, did Judge Wu lift the drug testing?
Yes, he did lift the daily random drug testing. Actually, I'm still waiting to talk to my pretrial services officer about the new conditions, but that one of them is that I'm not going to have to call every day to see if I drug test the next day,
Now, you have not been able to medicate for how long now, Charles?
Well, since July 17th, 2007, so...
That's almost three years.
3 years, but a little bit less than 3 years.
Charles, I'm so sorry to learn of this, and we are, of course, completely in your corner here at the California Marijuana Report. Now, we were hoping Judge Wu would lift that drug testing requirement as a part of your bond, but he refused to do so. Why do you think he did that?
No, actually, he did lift it. He lifted the drug testing, daily random drug testing requirement.
But why? So then why aren't you allowed to medicate then as a medical marijuana patient? It's just because they don't believe in medical marijuana. That's why they won't let you do it.
Right, because it's still illegal against federal law, and since they have control to me, I'm bound by federal law. State laws don't matter, when the feds come down on you.
Copy that. All right, Charles, well, we are...
we are concerned here that this will just continue for years and years and years, bouncing up and down the federal system. Is that what your attorney is predicting here?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a long haul, you know. Although I was only sentenced to 1 year, then along with that 1 year, I also got 4 years probation, you know. And I haven't even, the house arrest doesn't work, count, and all this other stuff I've done doesn't count, you know. So if I ever end up going to jail, I'll have to go and do the 1 year. And then plus, I'll be on probation for 4 years after that, you know, and it's already been 3 years now. And so, it's going to be a pretty long haul unless I get some small miracle, like in my case gets thrown out in the Ninth Circuit, or maybe a pardon from the president, or, you know, something like that. Otherwise, it's going to be a long, long time for me, you know.
Charles, your case has been featured on international media. We've had you on Larry King Live. I've seen you on ABC News 2020. John Stossel has covered your case. Al Roker even did a piece on you. Why are you, with all this media coverage, and especially with the near 1,000, probably more than 1,000 medical dispensaries operating in the state of California, how can the feds and, I guess, Joe Russinello's office, who's prosecuting you out here in California, how could they justify this?
Well, I don't know. It sure seems pretty unfair, you know, that, I operated the only dispensary in our county here, and the local sheriff, he was willing to do a lot of the feds' work for him. You know, I found that out during my trial. The DEA wouldn't have even gotten my case for over a year or two, but yet the local sheriff, he's willing to spend California taxpayer money to do the work for the feds. So that was one reason. And then another reason is the judge even pointed this out in his memo that, you know, I kept such good records of my business that it was for the feds, it was a no-brainer. I mean, they could just pull my own books out on me and, you know, get me convicted in federal court without even a chance, you know. And so those are just a couple of the reasons why it come down on me. And, you know, it's really unfair that they come down on me, where down in L.A. there's thousands of dispensaries that are possibly not even, you know, operating legally, and they're all getting warning letters to shut down, you know. And there's dispensaries in Santa Barbara, they're in Oakland, they're all over the state, but even to this day, we still don't have one in our county, you know. And actually, if you read the local free newspaper here, you gotta see there's like a bunch of doctors who are issuing, doctor's recommendations, and also there's a bunch of, at least four home delivery services now, so at least patients are able to gain access, but definitely not fair what they've done to me, and then, you know, they've done it to a number of other people, you know, too, so I'm not the only one. But possibly one of the reasons they came down on me is because I had one of the most legit dispensaries in the entire state, you know, with the support of the city of Morro Bay, the mayor, the city attorney, the chamber of commerce, and the feds, they'd rather see these things fail, and, you know, made it sound like I was the very worst. The word they use is egregious, you know. They said, well, I was the most egregious of them all, you know, and that's totally not true. I was the most legit of them all, and yet they still they're still trying to destroy me, you know, to this day. The feds, you know, I'm filing my appeal over the conviction and sentence, and then also the feds are filing an appeal also to my 1 year measly sentence. They're trying to say that I should be getting at least 5 years.
The feds were unimpressed with Judge Wu's justice on you, Charles Lynch. That 1 year in federal prison and 4 years of federal probation was just not satisfactory to Joe Russinello's office at the Justice Department, saying, we want more prison time for you, Charles Lynch, for operating that legally sanctioned grow operation and medical cannabis dispensary in Morro Bay, California. What exactly are they asking for, Charles Lynch?
Well, if I get to 5 years, then it'll probably be, actually, I don't know, another 4 or 5 years after that of probation.
Unbelievable. These are filthy, disgusting human beings to do such a thing to a man such as yourself, Charles Lynch. I am absolutely outraged. Okay, so what's the name of this dirty creep that turned you into the feds?
Well, his name is Sheriff Pat Hedges. And, you know, they say I'm the most egregious of them all. You ought to see, he's got a pretty bad track record himself. And people, if they type in pathedges.com, they'll find the atrocities that have been committed under his watch, from his deputies killing people to possessing child porn. And, you know, he's even been under investigation and for illegally taping his own employees, you know. So he's not a very compassionate guy, and he's definitely not working on behalf of the people of the state of California. In fact, he's not running for re-election this year, you know. The elections are coming up, and so we got a whole list of new candidates that are running for sheriff here in San Luis Obispo County, and Pat Hedges, he's on his way out.
We will have a celebration here at the California Marijuana Report in conjunction with you, Charles Lynch. Charles, talk to me about your living situation. Is it true your home is currently going into foreclosure?
Right, because I haven't been able to find a job to pay my mortgage, you know. That's mostly, I believe, because I'm being prosecuted by the federal government, you know. I mean, people, employers, they don't want to get involved with someone who's in my situation, you know.
And the web address to help Charles Lynch is www.friendsofccl.com. That is friendsofcharleslynch.com. Charles Lynch, thank you so much for joining us today on the California Marijuana Report.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Chief Mayor, and you listen to
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and before we get off onto ranting, I want to encourage you that if you'd like to advertise with Normal Show Live, we get between 100 and 200 live listeners, 5,000 total downloads a day, as well as 100,000 hits on the website every month. So there's a spot for you. Our top banner is now open, so send me an email, stash@normal.org, if you're interested in advertising. Now, to get to our rant today, I want to give you some more updates on the
dog shooting story. If you didn't catch this story, go up to our blog at stash.normal.org. We've got the chilling video of the Columbia, Missouri SWAT team bursting into a man's house, killing his dog, wounding another dog, while his wife and child were present, all over a misdemeanor amount of marijuana. So check out that video. We're not going to replay it here, but I did want to get to some of the responses from this. First, the first that I've seen this being covered in the national mainstream media is on Fox News. Judge Napolitano has a show called Freedom Watch. This is the clip from Judge Napolitano and his reaction, and as he interviews the mayor of the town to the dog shooting.
On Freedom Watch, we've tracked not just the most obvious, grandiose actions of our ever-expanding government, but also the everyday civil liberties violations that often go unnoticed. The war on drugs is the most common reason for the use of extreme tactics by local police. SWAT raids and even the use of military hardware are regrettably becoming more and more common. But what does it take for a home to become a target of a SWAT raid? Do you really have to be a terrorist cell, a major drug kingpin with several armed guards at your door? Answer, no. Sometimes, unfortunately, you can be the target of a SWAT raid even on the mere suspicion of an anonymous informant that you may possess enough drugs to make you a likely dealer. And many innocents have been killed in such raids. In Columbia, Missouri, the police raided a family home 8 days after getting a search warrant against the head of the home. During those 8 days, they might have had the opportunity to observe the home and have learned that there were children inside, there were dogs inside, and there was no evidence of any drugs inside. They only found a little bit of marijuana residue inside a pipe. Instead of doing this, they performed a SWAT-style raid. They shot both family dogs, killing one. They terrified the children and the family, who were put in far greater danger from the raid than they ever were from anything that took place inside that house. This was America, not East Germany or Nazi Germany, but Middle America. Joining us now is Mayor Bob McDavid and Mike Ferguson. Mike is the host of the Mike Ferguson Show on KSSZ, where they've been following and reporting on the case. The new mayor of Columbia, Missouri, Bob McDavid, who came to office after the raid, is now left trying to salvage the reputation of the police who did this. But can that be done as long as drug raids remain common? Joining me now is the man in charge of the local administration, Mayor Bob McDavid. Mayor, welcome to Freedom Watch.
Good afternoon.
When are the cops who did this going to be arrested and put in jail where they belong?
Well, we we've started a process.
We're going to do a process and we're going to do an evaluation. And what a perfect first question, Judge Napolitano. Yeah. When are these cops going to be arrested and thrown in jail like they deserve?
That was amazing. I don't like to give props to Fox News, but props to Fox News.
Props to Fox News on that one. Absolutely. So Judge Napolitano, we've got that entire video from Judge Napolitano up on our website as well in a post I've entitled Judge Napolitano on Fox, PETA, and Columbia Police Respond to Furor Over Missouri SWAT Dog Shooting. Now, let me get to PETA, because I've made this point before. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and Bill Maher, for one, who's a supporter of PETA, I've been saying, why aren't they publicizing this more? Why aren't they motivating and rousting all of their membership to fight against this insane killing of dogs and these SWAT raids and the unnecessary use of force in these drug cases? But of course, PETA's been silent on the issue. One of my readers forwarded to me a response that he got from PETA. This says, quote, "We share your concern about the circumstances under which these dogs were shot. We understand the responsible agency is conducting a thorough internal review of the incident, and we sincerely hope that this review will lead to policy changes that will ensure that it is never repeated. These tragedies happen more often than one would imagine. It seems we're inundated with calls every week from people whose dogs were shot by law enforcement personnel. Officers appropriately resort to deadly force when they believe that their lives or the lives of others are in danger, but sometimes officials draw their guns unnecessarily or too quickly. Regardless, it's important that all officials whose work brings them in contact with animals be trained to deal with animal situations effectively and humanely. If, after reviewing state law and local law, it is believed that a government agency wrongly injured or killed a companion animal, the shooter could face prosecution and the animal's guardians may be able to sue. Thank you for concern in writing, blah, blah, blah. Nothing about PETA actually doing anything about it. Because basically, PETA's not going to do jack about publicizing this as much as they'd protest some actress wearing a fur coat or some biker wearing a leather jacket. Shame on you, PETA. Quit hiding behind this namby-pamby weasel words here and get out in front of this issue. You say in your own statement here, it seems we're inundated with calls every week from people whose dogs were shot by law enforcement personnel. You don't think that's an ethical way to treat animals, do you, PETA? Come on now. All right, let me come back to the other people deserving of some of my wrath, and that is the cops there, the people in Columbia, Missouri, who are now responding to this because the video is close to topping 1 million views, and the whole internet is outraged about it. They wanted to indicate some of the search warrant affidavits here and some of the reasoning behind their shooting here. First of all, they wanted to point out that during the search warrant, one of the dogs was shot and killed. This dog was a breed commonly referred to as a pit bull, right? So here is what the officers knew on the warrant. I got a copy of the warrant. This is what the warrant said. There's reason to believe the crime of marijuana, a Schedule I controlled substance, and evidence of the crime of drug trafficking, including records, phone numbers, cash, and apparatuses to facilitate the use and distribution of controlled substances, is being committed at the residence. And yet, they didn't find any of that. They didn't find any cash. They didn't find any evidence of major drug trafficking. Number two, they say a cooperating citizen with a history of truthfulness and reliability advised that the suspect is selling large amounts of high-grade marijuana in the Columbia area. A cooperating citizen, a.k.a. a snitch. Another cooperating citizen who has proven reliable and truthful on numerous occasions has observed a large amount of high-grade marijuana inside the suspect's residence during the past 10 days. Two snitches. During an examination of the contents of the trash bags outside, I found a baggie containing THC residue and numerous items of drug paraphernalia with THC residue item on them. So two snitches and some empty baggies and empty pipes with a little bit of marijuana residue. And then they point out that Whitworth has numerous previous arrests, including resisting arrest, possession of marijuana, delivery, manufacturing, and so on. Now, noticeably absent from this crack detective work and a plea to a judge to allow Detective Dog Killer and Stormtrooper buddies free reign to bust in his door and start firing automatic weapons. You know what wasn't in the warrant? Suspect is living in his home with a wife and 7-year-old son. Suspect has two dogs, a pit bull and a corgi in the residence. Do you think the judge would have been so quick to sign that warrant if that information had been included? Well, maybe. Possibly. Probably. But anyway, this entire invasion was based on pot that wasn't there, with no knowledge of children or pets that were there. Didn't your garbage snoop turn up something other than the empty baggies? Like maybe, I don't know, a kid's juice box, a baggie of dog poop, anything that would have kind of given you a clue that there were kids and dogs in there? And it took you 8 days between the warrant and filing it and doing the raid. In that 8 days, you didn't observe the home. You didn't notice the mom and the kid coming out. You didn't notice the dogs barking at any time. So to further justify their actions, here's what they want to say. They say, this is again the Columbia Police Department. The police department has received numerous inquiries from citizens who have received misinformation. While the investigation is still ongoing, the department recognizes the need to provide information prior to its conclusion to clarify some specific questions, many of which are based on misinformation. Right? So you saw the video, you heard the dogs, but you know, you can't make up your own mind about what's going on here. Number one, they say the pit bull type breed dog was not confined, it was not in a cage, and it was not behind a gate. The other dog, described as a corgi, was not killed. This dog is believed to have been struck once. Believed to have been struck. What? We need further investigation to try to figure out if the gunshot wound to the dog's paw perhaps came from somewhere else? And what? Oh, it's a pit bull that was killed, so that makes it okay now, doesn't it? Because pit bulls deserve to die? Because a dog that's been trained to defend its home and its owner from invaders would do what a dog does naturally? It deserves to die? They go on in their justification here. The defendant's wife and child were at the residence. However, neither was in the presence of the officers or dogs when the dogs were shot. Oh, okay. Well, the child didn't actually see Detective Dog Killer shoot his pets. He only had to hear gunshots, his pets yelping in agony and terror, and only saw one of his pets' corpses as the body armor and mask-clad strangers with still-smoking weapons led him and mom out of the house while others are manhandling and screaming at his daddy. Sure, there were 7 bullets flying around the home, but none of them pierced the paper-thin walls to harm the child, so it's all good, right? Here's another one of their justifications. The officers did not force entry into the home. The door was unlocked and the officer opened it. So you're telling me the big time drug dealer goes to bed at night without locking his front door? The guy you presume to have large amounts of high grade marijuana and cash related to drug trafficking in his home, a guy by your accounts is a repeat offender, well versed in the drug trade, and he leaves his front door unlocked at night. Sure. And they further go on with one more justification here. The search warrant was not served for a misdemeanor amount of marijuana. The Columbia Police Department does not pursue search warrants for misdemeanor amounts of marijuana. The search warrant was for marijuana, a Schedule I controlled substance, and the evidence of the crime of drug trafficking. So in other words, Columbia Police Department only go to the trouble of bursting into people's homes late at night, terrorizing women and children, and killing family pets only if there's more than 35 grams of marijuana involved and the suspect is selling it to adults who are willing to purchase it. See, this is the thing. They're trying to say that it was a drug bust gone awry, that things went wrong, that they didn't serve the warrant in time to catch the guy with enough drugs. They're missing the forest for the trees. The point here is that you're using armed invaders to bust people over pot. That's why we're upset. Not because your timing was off. Not because you didn't get the weapons of mass destruction. Oh, I mean the weapons you thought were there. Or the drugs you thought were there. No, it's because you're serving drug warrants in a violent, military manner that don't need to be served that way. SWAT was originally intended for hostage situations and gunfire situations, not for small-time pot dealers sleeping in their home. And that's that. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant.
So what kind of weed do you want? I got the Incredible Hulk. I got some of the Green Monster. I got the bling.
Hey, we go through this every time I come here. I don't care what it's called. I just want a bag of fucking weed.
Whoa, chill, bro. You know you can't raise your voice like that when the lion's here.